Michaels, are you okay?
It's just beer.
Oh, give me a break.
It's just beer.
Oh, man up. All right, what happened? What'd you lose him?
He's a freak. He's a fast killer. He's a fast killer.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Muskies on Tap. Hope everybody had a safe and fun holiday over the 4th of July. And hopefully that you're out there on the water and you could chase some muskies. Hope you had maybe a little bit of time to relax as well with family, see some friends, have a good time. But this week, let's introduce the other members here on tonight before we get any further. And we got Max Manti. How you doing, Max?
Good. Feel a little banged up from the 4th, but overall, very excited for today here. We're actually recording this podcast in the morning, live again from the boys' cabin, debate cave. We got a good day in front of us here. As much as I love talking about muskies, I'm a little bit more excited to get out and actually do some muskie fishing today. We got a nice afternoon moon phase that looks like it's going to happen right before some big storms are rolling in. So fingers crossed, something cool happens today. Got a good interview for you guys as well. But before we get into that, let me turn it over to our other co-host here, Mr. Brian Eckel, who I was able to share the ball with for a little bit this weekend.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here for the second time in the Bay Cave Boys Cabin. Just concluding on a long weekend of drinking, and energy levels are not at their peak quite early this morning, but yeah, I had a great 4th, and we did manage to squeak out a couple of mornings. Trying to think what day that was. Friday.
Yeah,
Friday, we went out for a few hours, and I mean, we were probably, within our first hour, we hit a crazy bite window that all went off in maybe a 10-minute window. We were trying to throw along this weed edge, maybe 8 feet of water. I was throwing, swimming dog, headed on the swimming dog at that time, brought it up to the boat, and saw a huge boil kind of right behind my bait. And like I said, I looked at Max, like, that wasn't my bait, was it? And then literally 3 seconds later, this fish just comes vertical and explodes on it. And must have caught me really off guard. I like set it across my body, my like shoulder and pec cramped up. So I like jolted my arm the other way. Then the fish came off. And then I'll hand it over to Max here, but that fish was not done eating yet.
Yeah, it was nice of Brian to give me an assist and after our Northern Wisconsin opener when he was just cleaning up in front of me, behind me, wherever you know he was on the boat. He was catching fish and I wasn't. So real nice of him to pass this one off to me. He loses the fish. Actually, the first time I've seen a muskie be hooked like that and come back and eat.
Yeah, I guess snap its neck.
Yeah, I mean, that fish was hooked that Brian had it. It pretty much, you know, like you said, went vertical, went airborne, a few head shakes, was gone. I was at the same time coming into my figure eight, and that fish just came right underneath my feet and ate. So that was pretty sweet. As we were releasing that fish, our buddy Thomas was with us, and he has never caught a muskie before casting. Caught one through the ice a few years back, but never caught one casting. And as I'm literally shaking the net in the water to kind of rinse it off, he has one come up in the eight and catches his first muskie in the figure eight nonetheless. So it was a really exciting about a 5-minute window there. Obviously just two really active fish sitting in the same kind of spot. So that was fun. Good little outing. Hoping to do some more fishing this week, but good warm up, very fun weekend. A little bit too much fun, some might say, but we're here and we're going to have a good one for you guys. But real quick, actually, before we get into the interview, Gus, do you want to just touch on some of your more recent outings?
Sure. Yeah. I've been out a good bit on some trips as well. I was actually out guiding while Max, Brian and Thomas were out fishing that morning, and fishing has been super good, getting a solid average of close to 3, 4, 5 bites a half day trip. And fish are just going hot on single eight bucktails. It's been just the absolute ticket in the boat, no matter what, given the day. They've just been eating those. I don't even some out of moon phases and stuff have been eating the bucktails, which is always a good sign. The water temps are finally just reaching like a 70 to 72 mark on most of your traditional lakes. You know, definitely the deep clear lakes are still behind. They just need a lot more to heat up. And the other one has just been some rubber baits. Right now we're seeing a lot of action on mid medusas, but that might be just because of the systems that we're fishing with smaller forage. I would definitely look into throwing more of like the pit bull mag dog size, pounder if you're really feeling it, and then probably going like a regular medusa or husky. Don't be afraid to throw those for sure once these water temps get up a little bit more.
Pit bull just dropped.
Yeah, and the pit bull just officially dropped. I think that was on Friday, the day after 4th of July, if I'm not mistaken. And definitely, if you didn't get your hands on those, I'm sure they're going to have more orders coming in, but I would highly recommend those. That is such a very good bait that kind of fills that gap between the reg and the mag and the weight. I like the heavier head on it. It makes it have a lot more unique action right out of the box compared to the other bulldogs. We really enjoyed using them, caught a couple fish on some of them, and I think all three of ours have been chewed. Two of them have boated some fish, and we look forward to using those a ton more now that the larger rubber bite, I feel like, is heating up a little bit more. So looking forward to a lot more fishing coming up. I think fishing should only get better. July is the month of a lot of hungry fish. Should be a good month for numbers. Hopefully the big fish will fall soon. And we've been seeing a bunch. I think every time out, I've been seeing at least one or two over 40 some inches, even on some action water. And I know recently we had about a mid 40s porpoise, like 10 feet to the right of a client's bait as they're bringing it in. And we're both looking at each other like, what the heck? He's like, is that one falling? I'm like, I don't know. I think so, maybe. But it never ended up falling in. It was just porpoising right next to his bait, which is pretty bizarre. But a lot of active fish. A lot of fish are stacking up in spots. And just play your windows right. Watch the moon. Moon has been extremely key. And a little bit of that morning wind pickup is key. And can't go wrong with sunset. So good luck out there to everybody. And I think we'll just kind of roll right into the interview here with Aiden, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. All right, here on the line, we got Aiden Johnson with Aiden's Angling out of the Metro Lakes of Minnesota. Aiden, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to have you on. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to chat some muskies here, and I think we'll get right into it. Let's maybe start with how you got into fishing in general. How'd you get into that? Like, who brought you into that? And then maybe tie into the muskies and how those kind of showed up.
Perfect. Yeah. So like, what's interesting for me is starting fishing. I actually kind of started with musky fishing. Because about 10 years ago, me and my dad moved on, and my whole family, we moved on to one of these metro lakes here with muskies in them. And my dad and I fished together all the time for pike and bass and everything. And I remember one day he shows up from work with this big, long, white fishing rod. And I'm like, what the hell is that thing? Are you going for sharks? And he's like, no, muskies. I'm like, what is a muskie? He's like, well, these pike we've been catching, I mean, I guess they get bigger and cooler, and they eat both sides. And I'm like, dang, I want to see what this is all about. So we go out for about 3 hours out here right in the backyard, and I'm just casting pike and bass. I probably only fished for like a month at the time, but I just really enjoyed, you know, catching pike on spinnerbaits and bass, kind of the same way that every kid eventually gets into muskie fishing, through catching other fish, and then, you know, you see a muskie or whatnot. But my dad's casting this MEPS number 5 right over this big weed bed, and we go the whole day, you know, fish 3-4 hours. He doesn't see anything. And then right as we're about to go in, he's like, all right, I'm making one more cast. And I look over, and all of a sudden his rod's tripled up. He's like, got one. And just the biggest fish I've ever seen comes to the surface and just starts doing these monster head shakes. You know, I got this tiny bass net, and after like a 5-minute fight, I eventually managed to get this thing's head in. He grabs a tail, And we got it in the boat. It was like a 46 and a half incher. And as he was releasing it, I turned to him and I'm like, that's what I want to do. You know, I want to catch those things. So that's kind of how I first got introduced to musky fishing. And then later on in the road, the guiding thing kind of came in when I used to go fishing a lot, and I still do actually, very good buddy to this day. But Ryan McMahon was a musky guide here in the metro. He still does guiding, a little bit of guiding too, but I think he's kind of slowing down on that now. I'm not too sure how many trips he's running a year, but we used to fish a lot with him back in the day when me and my dad decided, hey, we really want to get into musky fishing. This is what we want to do. And I caught my first musky with Ryan when I was 11 years old on a topwater. And I think that whole experience of just being guided to it and watching him every day in the boat get to make his living fishing was just such a cool eye opener to me. And I just really wanted to do that. And last summer when my parents gave me the option of either go find a real job or maybe start doing some guiding, it was a pretty easy decision for me to make. I was like, hey, I think I'm gonna start trying this guiding thing, and haven't looked back since. It's been awesome. So
Literally.
yeah.
I think I can definitely relate. I'm like, go fishing all the time or sit at a desk or something like that. Yeah, it made
It's
a
a pretty
decision.
easy decision to make. Yep.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely relate when you see like the musky poles for the first time. I get that a lot with customers who have really never been musky fishing. They hop in the boat and they're like, what are we going for? Look at that net. And I'm like,
Yeah.
you could fit in this thing. It's pretty
Yeah, I'd
ridiculous
never
looking
even seen
now,
one
but
until he caught that one. So when he caught it, I thought it was just the coolest thing ever. And I stopped bass and pike fishing like a month into doing it and just went straight up muskies from there. So that was
yeah,
kind of interesting.
I don't doubt it. It's sometimes just pretty baffling that like fish of that size and caliber can be in these lakes. It's pretty cool. In the metro, it seems like there's some absolute giants out there and some really, really, really big fish out there. So you're in an area of like great fishing, it sounds like. So I guess let's get into that because that's your expertise. That's where you grew up fishing. So I mean, what's it been like in the metro for, musky fishing in general? Have you seen it going in a good direction, okay direction, staying the same? Where's it at right now, you
Yeah.
think?
Yeah. So I think overall right now, the metro seems to be doing pretty good. I mean, the area I'm in, we have three main lakes to fish. I live in the east side of the metro. I'll go to the west side now and then, but on the east side, we have Bald Eagle, White Bear, and Forest Lake. And all three of those right now seem to be doing very good. Good numbers in all of them. And one thing that was kind of cool this year and last year that I got the opportunity to do is I was actually given one of those tag readers, which allows you to scan the fish. You know, you get the pit tag number, and then you send that information into the DNR, and in exchange, they give you some information back on like how long the fish has been in the lakes, what stocking year, what class they came from, and whatnot. And that was really cool for me because I got to see all these healthy populations of young fish, especially out on White Bear and Bald Eagle were the two lakes where that pit tag scanner works, and Minnetonka, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But yeah, so on White Bear and Bald Eagle, I think last year I caught more fish in that 33-inch to 38-inch range than I've ever caught before. And just getting to tag scan all those fish and see, they're only putting in, most of the fish were only put in 2, 3 years ago. And getting to see that was a really good sign for, I think, what's yet to come and what the future looks like in all these metro lakes. But yeah, a lot of little ones running around and very healthy, bigger ones too. So I think the metro is in a pretty good state right now. We get some good stocking too, so that always helps.
Yeah, when we were chatting before you hop or before we started recording here, I was, we were talking about my time on Tonka, and that was one thing I was really surprised by was seeing fish, even in similar spots all the way from like that upper 20s range, up to the upper 40s, which just kind of shows that it's a good fishery. I've never been on the east side, and fished any of those lakes. Are they pretty similar as far as like clarity and depth? Kind of relative to some of those Western lakes, or I guess too, like are all three of those lakes you mentioned, are they similar or are they each kind of different? Like, are you able to kind of pick and choose depending on the day? Would you choose one lake over another, for any particular reason?
Yeah, absolutely. So like White Bear, I always compare a little bit more to parts of Minnetonka. or maybe more that main Lake Minnetonka, because it's that deeper, clearer water. And that makes it awesome a lot of times for like a fall bite, or you get a better open water bite on white bear than other lakes. But Bald Eagle and Forest have a little bit of that just more stained water. So a little bit more of a weed edge bite there. If it's tougher, I tend to go over to one of those two lakes. But white bear, yeah, so white bear I think compares more to like a Minnetonka, where it's just kind of got that deep, clear basin. And the other two lakes are pretty awesome too. They fish a little bit more similar to each other in some of the smaller lakes over on the west side, like Lake Independence and kind of Waconia too. But yeah, it's nice because there's definitely some variables that are different between the three lakes, which makes it awesome because I can definitely sort of pick and choose what lake I want to be on each day, and it does change a little bit.
Yeah. So this is something I'm pretty excited to talk to you about because I think it's going to maybe help some people crack the code, myself included. A lot of times when I talk to people about metro bodies of water, like the first thing that really comes up is like pressure and tough to, you could, and I saw it in my first few trips this summer to some of those metro lakes where like you can see fish. That doesn't seem to be the problem. But getting them to eat, I mean, there were times when they would come flying around in the eight, like, up here in northern Wisconsin, if I saw a fish do that, you're almost guaranteed a shot at that fish. But there, it just sounded like they were mouthing baits, like smelling them. They would, kind of fake like they would come up in the eight, try to eat it, and then just kind of slowly turn off. And I feel it looked kind of like they were like, oh, I've seen this, IC7 or, an 8-9 or this type of bucktail, cowgirl, whatever. Like, 450 times already this year, so I'm not going to eat it. I mean, how do you overcome that? Is it definitely an issue that you have to deal with, or have you just kind of managed to? Because I mean, obviously, we've been following each other on social media. You're always posting pictures of fish. You've clearly cracked the code a little bit.
No, I appreciate it. I like to think I have sometimes, but one piece of advice, that's really helped me is your boat side mechanics play a big part of the deal here in the metro. And one thing I've actually done is I've gone down to 9-inch fluorocarbon leaders instead of some of those bigger, 14 to 12-inch fluorocarbon leaders. I've sized down a little bit for inline baits, specifically like bucktails or topwaters or whatever. And really making sure the shorter leaders, what they allow you to do is really make sure you get that nice wide turn in your figure eight. Because a lot of these metro fish, they're coming in and a lot of times they're looking to eat, but you still have to do everything right because they come to the boat, like you mentioned, they're pretty curious fish. They come to the boat quite a bit, and you got to make sure you're ready to perform that good figure eight and try to seal the deal. So I think the biggest thing with me is, like bucktails especially, that last like third of the retrieve, I want to make sure I give that thing some extra speed, and I want to make sure I'm making nice wide turns, hang it in the corner, trying to go a little faster through the straightaway. And just those boat side mechanics play a huge deal in the metro, because if you have a good figure eight, it's just going to help you seal the deal that much more. And I think having shorter leaders for some of those inline baits where you're not worried about fish missing it as much and, going to break your leader off, I think it's helped me put way more fish in the net than fish I would ever lose. And I haven't lost one yet because of leader failure. But with those straight inline baits, I really like to shorten down my leader size a little bit and just wide turns.
I definitely agree with that. We definitely run the shorter leaders on bucktails, like for sure, most of the time. But I got two questions for you on that. One with the figure eight, do you sometimes on a larger fish, do you switch to ovals? And I guess we'll just start there and then I'll get into the next one. Or do you
Sure.
like to?
Yeah. I mean, so the whole oval versus eight thing, right? That's tough for me to say. I always prefer figure eight. For me, that's just the way I've always done it, and it seems to work really well. I like catching them where you can sort of hang it in that corner away from the boat and have them facing away from the boat eating that bait. And then I like to be able to set right back into that thing sort of when they eat in that corner. Versus when you do the oval, sometimes I figure like if you get a really hot fish, that's gonna be like a first turn eater, right? That oval sometimes doesn't really matter if you're doing an eight or an oval because the first turn almost goes the same. But then the difference maker for me is with that oval, your second turn, you're almost hanging it more so by the boat. And I really like to hang that bait away from the boat. It might just be me, but I feel like the muskies are going to be a little bit more comfortable eating when they're not looking at, the Alumnicraft or Skeeter sticker right in the side of their boat. And and eating right at the thing. But I mean,
And
I'm
then
sure it
maybe
doesn't matter a whole lot, but I've always done eights and they've worked out really well for me. So I always tell people to do eights.
yeah, I definitely like that. We're more on the eights up here for sure. I've tried my fair share of ovals. I don't think I have much practice into it. I switched to ovals last summer, went like 0 for 7 both sides. You can say I made a I was struggling with a few missed figure eight fish, I think. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna switch to ovals, and then I went like 0 for my next 7. I was like, all right, back to eight this.
I can remember catching a couple on ovals, but it's always been on like that first turn where I feel like even if I did an eight or an oval, the first turn sets up pretty similarly.
Right, definitely. And then with the, we'll just keep on maybe bucktails or inline spinners. When they're out in the cast, I know you're saying you're speeding up before the eight. How important is like changing your speed throughout the cast? Or have you ever done just like maybe gotten on a pattern where like not changing the speed of the bucktail is good, or maybe slow rolling more so is good? I feel like that could maybe come into play on pressured waters, but then again, I know speed is always the triggering factor of these fish. So what do you do with, bucktail varying speeds?
So one thing that really matters to me is sort of what depth am I fishing these bucktails in? When I'm fishing blade shallow, a lot of times that's where that speed really seems to be the big trigger. But when I'm fishing blades over, maybe a deeper weed edge, or I know some people even like to throw blades over open water, but for me, like that deep weed edge stuff, I always like to size up my blade a little bit more. I might go to like an IC9 or an IC10, for example. 9-10 blades out on deeper weed edges always seem to be a pretty good bet. And on, when the sun's high, middle of the day, that's when I'll tend to usually use a little bit more of a slow roll. If you're night fishing too, slow rolling can be a great strategy. But I really like to slow roll sort of midday, right over deeper weed edges. And that's when you're right, I will not change my figure eight speed as much coming into the eight. I still like to give it some speed. But then one thing I can kind of do too to help me trigger bites, and I actually got a bite this year doing this, was I sort of like to do a deeper figure eight sometimes if I'm pulling them out of deeper water. And that's where sometimes having a longer rod, like a 9-6 or 10-footer, can come into play. Because I did have one fish this year that came in pretty late, and I was able to talk her into it, just doing a deep, slow, wide turn. And she just nipped at it. Yeah, I mean, that sometimes can be the difference maker. So I like to give it some speed in shallow. And when I'm sitting over deeper water, maybe I'll slow roll it a little bit more. But it all kind of depends on the structure you're fishing and the mood those muskies are in. As you guys know, you kind of got to read the muskie coming into the figure eight, and not every fish you're going to treat the same.
Yeah, I think those are great tips. And I mean, it's pretty evident you already have a wealth of knowledge and musky fishing and guiding. I wanted to kind of hit on that. I mean, you're probably one of the younger guides out there right now in the musky industry. What kind of like hurdles and challenges have you gone through or encountered, in your first couple of years here?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate enough where it's been like really, really awesome 2 years. And yeah, as a 17-year-old guide, I've definitely had, some more issues just trying to get. I mean, basically the biggest thing for me is I always feel like I have to work twice as hard with what I'm doing, because it's tough to get a client who's new to musky fishing, has never done it before, and they're gonna Google like fishing guides near me or something. And what makes you pick the 17-year-old guide over, the 34-year-old veteran? That's where I feel like I really have to work hard to sort of establish my name. And I think one of the best things that's been a game changer for me, as much as sometimes I don't like it, is social media. Because just being able to show people that, hey, I'm still here, I'm still putting fish in the net, has really been a game changer for me in terms of booking trips and getting people in the boat. And at the end of the day, I feel like my age hasn't really set me back at all. Because I think once people realize that, hey, man, this kid's catching fish, or whatnot, I think they start to disregard how old you are and want to get on some fish themselves. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's definitely been a little bit of a hurdle trying to talk somebody into getting me in the boat over that veteran. And I think for me, it's just working hard, but I've really enjoyed the process. And I don't think I'd have it any other way right now. So it's been a ton of fun.
So do your buddies like understand kind of what you do and everything like that, and kind of get it? Because I mean, I as I've gotten older, it's musky fishing typically tends to happen at times when other people are kind of hanging out or going out. You're putting in those late nights, early mornings, so it's
you're a little bit hindered on what you can do, you know, the night before as like a younger guy. I mean, what's that kind of been like? I mean, you know, do your buddies kind of look at you funny when you're like, yeah, I'm, you know, Saturday morning, I'm going out at 5 in the morning, or I'm gonna be, you know, there's a moon underfoot at 11:30 p.m. on a Saturday night, I'm gonna be out there. You know, is that what's that been like?
No, I'm pretty lucky. So at the school I go to right now, I've got about five buddies who are actually like they've all caught a muskie. Some of them are pretty into it too, but I think everyone for the most part's really respected it. And I think for me, kids have understood. I played hockey for a long time, but I eventually stopped playing last year. And I think everyone kind of respects the muskie fishing's like my thing, you know. I don't play any sports anymore, so now that everyone sees me out fishing all the time, they're like, "Oh yeah, that's his thing. Yeah, that's sort of what he does." And I think for me, I view it no differently than like some of my buddies might view playing hockey or basketball or baseball or, you know, whatever it is. It's just sort of what I do. And for them, I guess they think I'm a little crazy for the early wake-ups, but I'm fortunate enough where I've got a good group of buddies who do a lot of duck hunting, fishing, and a lot of them do some musky fishing too. So pretty lucky to have those buddies who want to do it with me, but they definitely think I'm a little bit crazy some of those days when I'm waking up at 4:30 to go hit a new lake.
Any of your buddies that you drag out for those, you know, 10, 12, 14-hour benders at all, or you, and they're like,
Yeah, me and my so funny you say that. Me and my buddy always sort of do a Northwoods bender, sort of like you guys do. We spend about I think the first time we went up, we did like 5 days up in the Northwoods, and they'll do the long days and the long hours. But when it comes to the last couple hours, I'm definitely still the one, you know, chucking the blades the hardest and staying motivated. I remember one day actually we were sucker fishing 2 years ago, I want to say, and my buddies were both like asleep in the front of the boat, and I had a total, you know, disaster of a day. All my electronics died, my big motor died. I was living on my trolling motor, which must have been separate to a different battery or something. And I'm using Navionics on my phone going down this contour. And both my buddies had just completely given up on the day. They're in the front of the boat sleeping. I had them set the rods up, which was I learned to be a mistake because they didn't turn the clickers on. And I look over and my other buddy's up, and he's like, "Hey, I think there's a fish on that rod." And I'm like, "Nah, the clicker would be going off." And he's like, "I don't know, just pick it up." So I pick it up, and sure enough, these giant head shakes are just on the other end. And I wake my one buddy up front. I'm like poking him with the rod. I'm like, "Hey, you want to reel in this muskie or what?" And he gets up, and we got lucky enough to actually catch the thing. It was like a 41 incher, but it was just hilarious because yeah, they can stick with it pretty good. But that was a funny one because he was literally sleeping up front, and I just poked him with a muskie, and that was his first ever muskie too. So that was pretty fun to watch. But yeah, no, they'll put in the work sometimes.
nice. So you also mentioned that you go up to northern Minnesota quite often, or once in a while during the summer. What's kind of the difference between fishing the metro and doing the northern Minnesota thing for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the northern Minnesota thing for me, obviously there's going to be a lot less pressure up there. In some areas of northern Minnesota, like I go to western Minnesota quite a bit, that northwestern Minnesota, like Detroit Lakes area. Sort of even I went up to Bemidji already this year to tour college, and we fished while we were up there. There still is a good deal of pressure up there too, so it doesn't change a whole lot of what I do. But the fish up there that I'm targeting tend to be a little bit bigger, whether I'm going to Western Minnesota or whether I'm hitting the Bemidji Lakes, going to Canada even. So I guess I'll fish for them a little bit different, but a lot of times I'll just take tactics that I have here in the metro and they'll apply really good up there. But I think the biggest difference is a lot of time you're fishing for bigger fish and they're a little bit stupider too. So I don't know, your timing. You don't have to be as crazy with your timing as you do around here, but I think that's another thing in the metro that you got to be really aware of is just your timing and when you're hitting spots, and because you're refishing stuff that other people have fished a lot here in the metro. There's not as many secrets, and up north it definitely seems like you can get on cooler bites that less people might know about or less people might be fishing. So
Sure. So you
yeah.
mentioned you're touring some schools up there. Are you is one of your, you know, prereqs for going to college making sure it's by some musky water?
Of course, yeah, of course. My parents, I think they want me to get away and check out some other stuff, but I'm too addicted at this point. They've already lost me, so kind of looking at trying to go to a school pretty close to home, or maybe northern Minnesota. Kind of looked in Wisconsin too, like that Eau Claire, Madison, all those
Yeah.
schools. But yeah, I'll probably end up sticking somewhere with Muskies. But
Have
yeah.
you done any fishing over here in God's country, aka
I
Wisconsin?
have. Yeah. My buddy has a cabin on Yellow Lake, I believe it is. So I've
Okay.
done some fishing there quite a bit, if you know where that is. And I fish the St. Croix, which is kind of border water to God's country, but I don't fish a whole lot in Wisconsin. So a little
Yeah.
bit, but not a whole lot. I've caught some skannies though, but not a ton.
That's good. Yeah, some greenies. Yeah, no, that's funny. I'm just curious,
They're
you know, it's
mean, I'll
funny.
give them credit.
Oh yeah, no, they're certainly, they can be fun. Some days they suck, but that's just, I think, pretty common across the Muskie range. No, I just hear you talk about, you know, going to tour Bemidji. I'm like, man, if I was, not saying I would change anything about what I did, but like, if yeah, going to a college by some like trophy musky water could be a little dangerous, but also a lot of fun.
Yeah, the Bemidji thing was especially fun because we got up there, and the day I was actually touring the college after it was over, we had about an hour or two to kill before sunset, maybe a couple more, maybe like 3 4 hours. But we were like, you know what? We only had 3 or 4 hours. We could go for Numbers Lake, or we could just swing for the fences. So naturally, we decided to swing for the fences with a big one, and we hop out on this bigger body of water in Bemidji after touring the college all day. I think me and my dad are both pretty tired, but first thing I like to do when I get to a new lake is I just drive around the main basin and sort of see what's out there for bait and side image. I do a lot of side image work. And I got to the weed edge, side image that, but I'm out in open water, and we've been out here on this big lake that I've never fished in Bemidji for about 3 minutes. And I see this just monstrous Cisco school on side imaging to the right of the boat. Hand my dad this XL Beaver, and I get in the back of the tube and I'm like, yeah, we should cast at these things. So my dad takes about like three casts, and I just watch his like second rip. He's like, got one. And I go over at the net, and I'm like, no way. We've been on this lake for like 5 minutes. And sure enough, I get there, and just the fattest 46 and a half incher I've ever seen slides into the net. And I'm like, yeah, I might have to go to college up here. So some of those tours have been pretty fun for me because I've gotten to sneak some fishing into some of them too. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. I like that a lot.
I'm trying to imagine, you know, a freshman in college already being like a full-time fishing guide, and outside the dorm parking lot, there's a 21-foot ranger. Nobody else has a car at college, then you just got the boat and the truck there. You want to get into like your boat setup, what you're running, maybe your rods, reels, and all your equipment.
Yeah, so right now we've got a Skeeter MX 1825. We got it 2 years ago, it would be now. It's been an awesome boat. I absolutely love the thing. And my uncle even helped us build a casting deck on the back, an extended one, and put a rubber mat over it, got the just in cases. So it's rigged up like perfectly right now with all the equipment that I need. And I'm lucky enough where my dad lets me use it basically whenever I want. I'm pretty lucky. I've actually, since we moved on the lake at 8 years old, I've had my own boat. Eight, nine, however old I was when we lived out here. I always had, you know, like a 20 horsepower little tiller on the back of a aluminum craft, and I got to get out there all the time. So I've just been driving boats for a very long time, and I'm lucky enough where, you know, my parents basically let me take it out whenever I want, chip in some of the gas money now and then, and it's about all I have to do. But I guide out of that thing, and it's been an awesome boat to guide out of. As far as rods and reels, I run a lot of the Thornbros stuff. Just being nice and conveniently close to them. I go and get, I don't know if you guys heard of that shop or got any of their
Oh
custom gear or
yeah, I'm
whatnot,
rocking
but
with Thorn Bros
oh
hoodie
yeah,
right
there you go. Yep,
now.
yeah, that's sweet. Yeah, they make awesome rods. I've had some
This
of
is
their rods too.
my big fish hoodie. That's why I got it on today.
Nice. Yeah, nice. That's awesome.
All
Yeah,
right, I
but
caught you on the
no worries. I was just saying, yeah, I end up using a lot of their rods and get my reels from there and whatnot. So, yeah.
Awesome. Good deal there. Okay. So we talked a little bit about the kind of different size classes on in some of these metro lakes. You said you talked a little bit about catching a lot of those kind of like 33 to 38 incher like that kind of class size fish. Do you see those like jumbo fish too on the East Metro that kind of Minnesota is known for? Like, do they show up? You know, Wisconsin, we've kind of touched on this, but like, it almost seems that there's kind of the seasons within the season that these big fish kind of show their faces in Wisconsin, where they're always there around, but all, you know, there's really certain times where you can, they're accessible, if you will. I mean, they're always accessible, but there's times when they're more
Right.
accessible. On those metro
For
waters,
sure.
like, you know, are you fishing that same point that you fished the last 5 days, and all of a sudden, wham bam, there's a 53 that just shows up one day? I mean, is that kind of how it goes there?
Yeah, I mean it certainly can be, and we definitely have big fish around here, but like anywhere else, I mean, as you mentioned, it's, you know, you're only gonna see them during certain times of the year, and I think it's all about being at the right time at the right place. You can definitely tell, like, around here that the fall seems to be a much better big fish time. Pretty typical for muskie fishing anywhere, but it seems like in the fall around here especially, that's when some of your bigger fish start to slide shallow up, and we get cool sand bites around here, weed bites, maybe even the limited shallow rock that we do have, we'll see fish slide up on that. And I personally love catching those big fish right as that water starts to cool down and they slide shallow. But I mean, now the game's kind of been changed with live scope, and people have been getting them out in open water this time of the year too. And I mean, I don't personally run it, but I know a lot of people who've caught some really nice fish this year running it. And it definitely seems like my favorite way to get them is when they seem to push shallow and fall, and you can catch them right up on top of that structure. But you can definitely see them all year. There's no, you know, there's no rule about when you're going to catch them, but it's cool when you see them for sure.
You know, maybe we'll touch on that live scope thing, because I think it's a little different between Wisconsin and Minnesota. I mean, just from talking to buddies in Minnesota, it just seems to be a lot more predominant over in your area than it is up here, just as far as the amount of people running it and kind of how they're running it. But I was going to ask real quick, if, you know, we get into that, great. If not, no worries. But the one thing I wanted to know is, so with these big fish in the metro waters, I mean, we've kind of always associated and heard that Minnesota fish still, they love blades, right? Still love bucktails. Obviously, they do up here as well, but it just seemed like even when we went to Vermilion last year, you know, we heard a lot of, like, throw big blades, you know. I was just curious, like, do you find yourself catching those bigger fish on bucktails, or is it more rubber, beavers, like pull paws stuff that you tend to get those bigger fish to kind of slip up on?
Yeah, I think that's another thing where it can be very time of year dependent, but I think with Minnesota bucktails, you're kind of a reliable 24/7 bait. I'll throw them from the start of opener all the way through till the end of the season. And I mean, not really in live bait season in November and whatnot, but I caught fish in opener on bucktails, and I've caught them in late October in bucktails, so or mid-October. And it's definitely a staple bait in, I think, any Minnesota muskie fisherman's boat. And for me especially, I think I'm pretty bucktail heavy. So yeah, I mean, I definitely see a lot of big fish coming in on blades every year, and big blades can definitely be good, but I think sometimes people do tend to overlook smaller blades too. I've definitely caught some of my nicest fish out on some of these lakes. I've been on some of the smaller blades, you know, double eights, eight nines, whatnot. I think I've put most of my bigger fish in the net. So they still love big blades, but I always tell people, like, hey, don't be scared to throw IC sevens, to throw eights, to throw eight nines, you know, whatever it might be. I catch plenty of fish on small blades every year too.
Right, we're just looking at each other when you're talking small blades. I mean, for us small blades, I mean, we throw down to like single five Colorados in line muskies up
Oh
here. That's if
yeah, I
we're talking
suppose IC
small
seven.
blade.
I feel
Double
like
eight.
you're
Same,
talking
like
about it.
double eight, eight, nine. I'm like, well, that's about, it's midseason here. We might as well start throwing those type deal.
Yeah, no,
We've moved.
Minnesota is definitely on the bigger side for blades for sure.
And I mean, with blades, you can't go wrong, because they got like just the best hookup ratio of any bait in the box, pretty much too. But back on one more question on like that big fish subject of the metro. Do you spend any time night fishing? Because that seems to be a really big ticket in Minnesota to get the big ones throughout the entire year.
Yeah. I know a lot of people who do spend a lot of time night fishing. I'm pretty sure, did you guys have Alex McLean on the podcast? I know he's a
We had
pretty big
Alex
night.
in
Like, he's one
like.
of those. Yeah. He's one of those guys you look at and you're like, wow, he's putting a lot of 50s in the middle of the night. But me personally, I'm more of a get up after him early kind of guy. I love waking up, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, and getting after him right as the sun's coming up. So I haven't done a whole lot of night fishing, but the fish I've caught at night have definitely seemed to be bigger fish, and it's just something I'm not like crazy interested in. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like to catch a big muskie as much as the next guy, but I would much rather just get up after him right at sunrise and fish majors in the middle of the day and whatnot, and pay attention more to those moon phases than getting up in the middle of the night. But it definitely is a big ticket that works here in Minnesota, and I would tell you guys that's something not to overlook when you guys come here.
For sure. Yeah. Another question on baits here, because here in Wisconsin we have a couple of the real big time staples, and I just don't know how much it's brought over to Minnesota. I know just after watching or going to Vermilion and Max now fishing the Metro a few times, gotten kind of a good idea of what people like to throw over there. Do you ever incorporate dive and rise? Like, I get, Suica is like the big staple, the big favorite. There's plenty of others, of course, but do you ever throw those at all or find yourself using that in the Metro?
Yeah, a lot of times this time of the year, actually June, and then this early July period, even into mid-July, actually, I'll throw those. You guys know what the bar fighters are, familiar with those at all? Yeah, I like any other Minnesota guy, nothing beats Magnum bar fighter as far as the dive and rise goes. Those things are awesome. But for
Yeah, they're
me,
huge.
I find they don't often in my boat get bit as much as more sort of used as a search bait, if that makes sense. I tend to move a lot of fish on those dive and rises, but I won't get the same bites or the same level of commitment that I'll get to a rubber bait or maybe a bucktail or a topwater or something like that. So I definitely use them, and I love throwing them from the back of the boat. A lot of days when I'm guiding, I'll be fishing in like the 3 hole, and if you haven't seen a fish in a little while, or you're trying to move something to come back on at a different time of the day or maybe the next day or something, I'll throw a dive and rise and just see if I can get some fish moving. But yeah, I don't think they play a huge part in my boat, but they definitely get thrown, and I definitely toss them quite a bit. But I just don't think they get the bites sort of that a rubber bait or a bucktail or even a topwater gets.
That was my next question, another bait question. But from being in Wisconsin, we just hear of like the big open water rubber bites in Minnesota, and then the blade bites. But yeah, how prominent or how good is a topwater throughout the year? And then same like a spinner bait. Those are two baits we've thrown a lot this week, and they're fairly prominent, especially depending on the body of water. But smaller spinner bait or topwater, I just don't hear a lot of them in Minnesota.
Yeah, so topwater gets thrown quite a bit in my boat, especially when it hits like that mid-August to early October is probably when topwater is the most prominent in my boat. But yeah, I think you can't beat a topwater sort of when they slide on that shallow structure. And it definitely seems like I use a lot of those Lake X topwaters, Cannonball Juniors, FBs, even some of the Bomb Squad stuff works great around here. And I definitely throw topwater quite a bit, so I think those are awesome. As far as spinner baits go, I don't do a whole lot of spinner bait fishing just because I don't find there's many situations where I'd prefer spinner bait over a bucktail. I know people love spinner baits and like super heavy cover. I'd rather my style of fishing, I'd rather sort of burn a smaller bucktail right over that cover. Or one thing I've been experimenting with this last week that's put one fish into my boat and got one really big bite that came off as I started using those smaller Kramer Bros wood ticks. If you guys are familiar with those baits, he just came out with like the baby wood tick, I think he calls it. And I've been using that thing to sort of use that wood body to float right over that heavy milfoil. And I've got some fish doing that this week because you don't have to, blaze it in to keep it above the weeds. You can kind of keep a nice steady pace and still keeping some speed, but you can get that through some pretty heavy cover riding right over top of it. So I mean, spinnerbaits definitely will get bit around here, but and spinnerbait trolling has been something too that I've heard some people putting some nice fish in the boat with. But personally, I think I'd rather burn some blades right over the top or go to that Kramer wood tick and let that thing ride right over the weeds.
Yeah, that's a nice bait. Going off of the top water question, this is something I'm kind of curious, and it might be a little bit of a dumb question, but the one thing I noticed from when I did my few times fishing in the Metro was like it didn't seem like there was an issue, fishing in 18 to 22 feet of water and throwing like an IC7 or like you said an 8-9, and that bait's maybe riding like 3-4 feet down depending on the speed, but like those fish were coming flying up and looking at it from, 18, 20 feet of water. That's like not something I would say is super common up in the north woods of Wisconsin. Like when we're throwing bucktails, it's usually in like, what would you say,
10 feet
three to 7.5. You know, we might be sitting out in 12, 13 feet throwing at that edge, or you know, most more times than not, even we're pushed up to like 9 and throwing in at times, dependent, obviously seasonal. But going off of that with the topwater too, I mean, what depths, I guess, would you be comfortable still throwing a topwater bait in the metro? Like, is your boat sitting on 22 feet of water and you're throwing a topwater? Because that just seems like asinine to us in the North Woods.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of like you guys in the North Woods, I do prefer to throw my top waters over a little bit shallower structure. So if I'm fishing sand or weeds in that 8 to 10 feet of water over a big rock hump, maybe I love to throw a top water. But I definitely have seen a lot of people with weed edges in specific, where you'll have your boat, positioned on a weed edge where the boat's in 18, maybe 20 feet of water, like you mentioned. And then the start of your cast might sort of be hitting that 10 to 14-ish range, and you might drag it right back over to that weed edge. And I'll definitely see topwaters get bit that way. And it's no different with the bucktails, right? If they're going to come up to the top foot of the column to eat a bucktail, in my eyes, what's the extra 6 inches to the very top of the water matter? I think topwaters are pretty efficient in that deeper water, like you mentioned. And I think it's really just a level of comfortability and also paying attention to how high the bait is in the column, right? Because you're going to have days where that bait's sitting lower in the column. And those are the days where I'd be less comfortable having top water ride in that little bit deeper water. But some days, you're casting, you're seeing bait scatter all over the surface and fish are coming way up to eat that bait. And I've known people who've seen such good open water bites where they've been throwing top water because the bait's been so high in the column and catching fish over, 40, 50 feet of open water on top water. I don't think it's like a real prominent pattern that happens all the time, but I think just paying attention to where that bait is in the column. And if, like you said, if you're in Minnesota and you see fish coming out of 18 feet of water off bottom, or maybe they're sitting suspended to come up and eat a bucktail, 1 foot below the surface, I think sitting on weed lines and doing stuff like that a little bit deeper, I would be totally comfortable and fine throwing a top water. But yeah, I don't know. For whatever reason, when you're on the weed edge, it does seem like it's really tough to beat blades and rubber. So I prefer to throw top water over a little bit shallower structure, but that's just me.
And of course, out there in open water, you never want to. The big thing that we've learned is never want to fish below the fish, because they're always feeding up. Usually hit
Always
sitting
looking
high
up.
on the column, you think. And if they're just not going at all, that's usually because they're just inactive or they have pushed back into the weeds. But with the top waters, do you like to? I guess let's just go into. You said you start liking to throw a lot of top waters in that mid-August time frame, where there's still pretty warm water. You're still coming off of the summer peak and first couple cool down start. Are you going to be burning some of those top waters in, or are you kind of just like letting, say it's a Lake X, it's a fat bastard, it's got the prop, are you letting it just like plop, like just slowly, or are you gonna bring that thing in and let it spit a ton of water? Or I mean, what's your preferred method for, let's just say, mid to late August?
Sure. Yeah, I like a nice steady retrieve. I don't think I work my top water particularly fast, and I don't think I work it particularly slow either. One thing I do with those top waters that sort of helped me is I know a lot of people do this, but you add that extra split ring and it can get your hook a little bit further down so it hits that prop. And I like to just keep that thing hitting the prop, keeping that plink noise in the water going and just keeping it in a nice medium retrieve. I don't think I work it particularly fast or anything, but I just like to keep a nice steady retrieve and let those fish get behind that top water. It's the best when you look back and there's one pushing wake behind the thing. And one thing I do too is I'm not afraid to throw top water over really big waves at all. I'll throw those CBJs and 4 foot rollers and let them roll right over the tops of the things, but just a nice steady pace. I don't think there's anything special I'm doing with the speed.
That's sweet. So the fish are kind of like sharks over there in Minnesota. They love to eat in the big rollers. I don't know if we've had success throwing top waters in super big rollers. We've definitely done it over some chop, but I don't think we own a big Anibal Junior, to be honest. We should probably get
Oh,
one.
you need to get them. They're pretty staple Minnesota bait. I had
Yeah.
one fish last year. I think it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, midday. 4 foot rollers, probably 20 mile per hour winds, and I'm letting this thing go right over, rolling right over the tops of these big white caps. And I basically watch this fish get a running start and like break this white cap in half, coming up to just inhale the Cannonball Junior like 10 feet from the boat.
Insane.
It's just
That's
this
so
nice
cool.
45 and a half incher, but it's sweet. They're not afraid to eat top water and big wind at all. So yeah, I like throwing them in all sorts of conditions come fall.
Man, this has been you've laid down some really good knowledge here. Definitely has my brain spinning for the next time I'm out in the metro or just Minnesota in general. It's getting me excited. And as we mentioned before we hopped on here, we got a little bit of a moon window approaching in the North Woods that we're gonna go try to get. But before we let you go here, and we'll definitely have you back on because I think we just kind of scratched the surface at some of these methods you're doing, and would be awesome to chat with you in the winter to kind of maybe do like a longer format one and
Yeah,
hear
sure.
all about your season and everything. But you mentioned you were heading out to Alaska for a trip. Are you going to be doing any fishing out there? Anything different? Or is that what's on the docket?
I
Or part
am, yeah. So my dad, we both kind of got into musky fishing together, but I'd say he's more of a fly guy and I'm more of the musky guy. So I make sure I fly fish with him quite a bit every year. We get in a lot of steelhead fishing in the spring and whatnot, but yeah, I'm pretty pumped. We're going 8 days in Alaska, fly fishing the whole time. We're going to be in a drift boat or like a drifting raft or something of that nature. I don't know what you call it, but just drifting down this river with these big boats, catching them on topwater mouse patterns is going to be the plan. And we're going to be camping along the bank and just moving further down the Kinnickethock River, I believe it is, every day. And should have a shot at some salmon and some grayling and some Dolly Varden too, but all on topwater, so it's going to be super fun.
Oh, that's a sweet topwater
Yeah.
mousing or what?
Yeah, doing some mousing. I'm looking
Oh
forward to
my,
it. I've never
that's
really got the
true.
opportunity.
If we've only ever seen videos of that, and because I know Brian and I, we got really into trout fishing a bunch when we went to school at Eau Claire,
Yeah.
I always wanted to try it, but never did because I know night fishing for big browns with topwater mouse or my the mouse flies would
Mousin,
be mousin. They
mice,
call them, yeah, mice.
mousin.
Mice. Night mousin. All right, I'm going to pass this on before I make another grammatical mistake here. I got the boys right in my face. Have you, on the fly note, you ever bring it into the musky boat in Minnesota?
That's the next step. Yeah, now that I've caught some steelhead in the fly, and now that we're pretty big into muskies, I think I got to combine the two one of these days. I've got a couple of buddies who do it on the river, and I got to get out with them one of these times to try it. But no, I don't think I've ever thrown a cast with a fly for a muskie, so I gotta do that for sure. That's on the bucket list.
Right on. Well, that trip to Alaska you got coming up sounds pretty epic. We'll next time we have you on, we'll have to just put a little pin in that one and hear all about some of the stories that you guys get into over there. But yeah, man, we really can't thank you enough for hopping on. This has been a lot of fun. I think it's been really informational. Obviously Gus and I got the Tonka PMTT coming up, and just kind of some of the stuff you've chatted about here that will probably translate to that tournament. I think it's been helpful, and I know we have people that listen into this that either fish in the metro quite a bit, are fishing in some of those metro tournaments here coming up as well. So we appreciate you kind of giving out some free tips, and I think if you're listening to this and want to book a guide trip in the metro, it seems like a great option to head out in your boat. So with that being said, if people do want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Yeah, so you can either look up Aidens.angling on Facebook or Instagram, or you can just give me a call. My number is 651-829-4281. You can also look at my website, Aidensangling.com, whatever's easiest for you. But yeah, appreciate you guys for having me on. Been a bunch of fun, and good luck getting them this afternoon.
Thanks, appreciate it. Yeah, we'll have to let you know how we do. Hopefully you get out there this afternoon. I know you said you had a guide trip tomorrow, so good luck to you there. And of course, the rest of the season, we'll be keeping tabs on you. We'll stay messaging and see how you're doing, and hopefully you can bag a couple really, really big ones this year. But good luck out there, and thanks for coming on. And everybody out there in the Minnesota Metro, go look up Aiden's Angling and book a trip.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, Aiden.
Yep, thanks for having me.